Okay, good afternoon and welcome everyone. My name is Claudia Diaz and I'm with Great Lakes ADA Center. Just want to welcome everyone to the Accessibility Online webinar series. Today's session is on assistive listening devices. And before we get started on the session, I just want to cover some housekeeping rules or information on the webinar platform. This platform, as I've already mentioned, offers closed captioning, and if you would like to access the closed captioning, you can click on the CC icon found in the top toolbar menu, or you can hit Control F8, and the window will pop up, which you can adjust as needed. This platform also gives you a couple options to adjust your view. So if you want to go to that view menu at the top, it'll give you layout options and you can pick a couple and it'll change the interface to your to meet your needs. So you can go ahead and play with that. The last thing I would like to mention is we are taking questions during the session in the chat area. They are private, so presenters and moderators will see them. We will not actually address them till the designated question and answer portion, but feel free to write your question in chat area so you don't forget it, and then we'll get to that as soon as the time permits with the question and answer designated time. The next thing I want to mention is the emotion icons. Please do not use those emotion icons as they are a little distracting, so we ask that you please do not play with those icons. At this time, I want to pass it over to Peggy Greenwell with the U.S. Access Board, and she will be moderating the session. Thank you. Peggy?
Thanks, Claudia, and welcome everyone to our session on assistive listening systems. Today, we have two presenters from the board. Paul Beatty, who's an accessibility specialist with the board, been here a long time. He actually started out in 1988, but became an accessibility specialist. He worked in the compliance office back in the late 80s and then came to the Office of Technical Information Services in 1992 and has been here ever since. He specializes in more of the building facility side of the standards and also does work in the area of vessel accessibility. So Paul is also joined by David Bockleys. David is more on the side of accessibility to electronic and information technology accessibility. And David came to the board in 2001. He comes from the Hearing Loss Association of America, where he served as director of the National Center on Assistive Technology. He holds a bachelor's degree in psychology from the University of Maryland and a certificate in assistive technology applications from California State University. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to David. And just to echo what Claudia mentioned about questions, you can feel free to submit them in the chat room as the presentation is going on. However, we will not be able to address them until the question segment at the end of the end of their presentation. So I'm going to turn it over to David.
Thank you, Peggy. Next slide, number 4, please. So this slide is entitled Assistive Listening Systems. For some people, that's a mouthful, not to be confused with assisted, as in assisted living facilities. It sometimes is abbreviated ALS, not to be confused with ASL, which is American Sign Language. In our session today, we're going to discuss how assistive listening systems provide access. What is an assistive listening system? Paul will talk about where the ADA and ABA standards require assistive listening systems and pros and cons of assistive listening system types. Next slide, please. Number 5, thank you. So how do assistive listening systems provide access to persons with hearing loss? Slide 6, please. I thought it would be useful to take a step back and think about hearing loss and the population that we're discussing today before we delve into the technology itself. People who are hard of hearing represent the largest of all disability groups. Over 50% of people with disabilities are hard of hearing. People who are hard of hearing account for about 20 million people, or 1 in 10 people in the country. Over one-third of people over the age of 65 have a hearing loss, so the incidence of hearing loss increases with age. Hearing loss is considered by some people to be an invisible disability, and that's important when doing an assessment of your audience. You can't just look around, so to speak, and determine who is hard of hearing. Although some people may have hearing aids and some people may use sign language, for the most part, it's hard to tell in advance. In fact, some of the people you work with may be hard of hearing and you might not have even known it. People tend to wait on average about 7 years from the onset of their hearing loss before seeking help. And there's various reasons for that. In some cases, it might be denial, but in other cases, the hearing loss kind of creeps up on you gradually, and they may not even be fully aware of it themselves. Sometimes you can see somebody sitting on the edge of their chair, leaning forward when they're talking to you, and that could be a clue that they really need to concentrate because they're having more difficulty hearing than they used to. There are about 6 million hearing aid users, so the point there is that most people with a hearing loss don't actually wear a hearing aid, and in some cases, perhaps because they have a mild hearing loss, they may not need a hearing aid, but we believe that there are people who need hearing aids who don't have them at this time. And then there are 22,000 cochlear implant users. A cochlear implant is a surgically implanted hearing instrument that helps somebody with severe hearing loss or who's deaf to begin to hear through a stimulation of the nerve. It can be programmed. It has a speech processor, so they can customize the kind of sound that's needed for individual users. So let's move on to slide 7, please. This is entitled Shifting Demographics. Baby boomers are used to high-quality sound systems and may expect a lot from an assistive listening system. They are less shy about asserting their needs. They don't stay home as much, so as they get out, you know, let's say to movie theaters, they'll tend to expect and use assistive listening systems. And they're increasing in visibility. Some people will actually be so forward as to wear a button on their shirt that says, please face me when talking with me because I'm hard of hearing. Slide 8, please. This is entitled Common Myths About Hearing Loss. One myth is that hearing aids are the solution. A hearing aid is kind of like a pair of glasses in the sense that sometimes even with glasses I might need a pair of binoculars to see at a distance. And a hearing aid can make things louder but not always more clear, and they can provide difficulty to people when they're in a noisy situation, and we'll talk more about that. Another myth is that everyone can speech read. Actually, most people with hearing loss don't have strong speech reading skills, and even the best speech readers will only get about one-third of the communication through speech reading itself. And we use the term speech reading rather than lip reading because speech reading can involve looking at other parts of the body language, besides the lips themselves. Third myth is that speech reading equals full understanding. Next, everyone with a hearing loss knows sign language. That's a common problem when somebody's seeking accommodations. They're hard of hearing and they're provided a sign language interpreter, except that they might have lost their hearing recently and they didn't grow up in a school for the deaf and they don't know sign language. So it's interesting that if you look at the full range of people with hearing loss, from mild to severe, only about 5%, less than 5% of people with hearing loss actually know sign language. Those would be people we might call deaf. And the last bullet is, you can hear when you want to. The implication behind that is that somebody who's hard of hearing is kind of tuning you out intentionally. And that may not be the case, that they really want to hear, and they don't always assert themselves and speak up and let you know how much they're missing. Slide 9, please. So what is an assistive listening system? Here's a definition. An amplification system utilizing transmitters, receivers, and coupling devices to bypass the acoustical space between a sound source and a listener by means of an induction loop, radio frequency, infrared, or direct wired equipment. So we'll be talking about those different types of equipment and also reviewing the benefits of assistive listening systems, the kind of problems that they actually solve. Slide 10, please. So assistive listening devices, sometimes thought of as binoculars for the ear, because they can bring sound from afar up to you, up close to you. So somebody sitting in the back of the room using an assistive listening system might end up hearing as well as sitting on the front row of the audience. They bring increase the loudness of specific sounds. What we're referring to in that bullet is speech, that we're trying to increase the loudness of what somebody's saying so you can understand the communication better without amplifying all the other sounds that might be in the room. So they help with minimizing background noise, and we'll explain the technology behind that. When somebody asks, you know, what is an assistive listening device, sometimes it's helpful to actually explain functionally that they help you hear better in a noisy situation and at a distance. Those two bullets are kind of concise and non-technical. I've talked about how it reduces the distance between the hard of hearing person and the sound source. And it also helps override poor acoustics. If there's reverberation in the room, if there's high ceilings and a marble floor, you tend to get a lot of echo. And this can cut right through it. So again, the person who's hard of hearing can just focus on what the speaker is saying. Next slide, please. So this slide is entitled ALD, that stands for Assistive Listening Device, Attachments and Couplers. One of the points in this slide is that somebody who's borrowing an assistive listening system receiver may be handed one type of listening device that's not appropriate for them and may ask for another type that works better with their hearing aid. So it could be a headset that covers both ears and could feed sound into both ears, so some people hear better binaurally, as it's called, through both ears than just through one ear. And this could fit over the head like personal stereo type headphones, or even under the chin. That might be called a stethoset. Next bullet is that you could be given earplugs or earbuds. Those are fairly common and inexpensive, but like I said, they may not be appropriate for everybody. There's earphones. Those are kind of half moon shape and can rest over the ear and hang down, directing sound into the ear. Neck loops are quite popular with people who wear hearing aids, as well as those who use cochlear implants. And we'll talk a little bit about how that technology works to bring the sound into the ear when neck loops are used. Silhouette inductors. This is a kind of a crescent-shaped device that would rest over the ear flat right against a hearing aid, an over-the-ear hearing aid. And because it's pressing against the hearing aid, it's just hanging there loosely, but it's right next to the hearing aid, there's very good pickup by the hearing aid telecoil, as we'll talk about later. I've spoken to people who were able to hear music through a radio by plugging a Silhouette inductor directly into a radio and hearing well for the first time. They can also be used with telephones. So it's interesting how the different applications of assistive listening devices will open up a world for people who might have used their hearing aid well just for the telephone, for example, and didn't know that they could use it in a special way with assistive listening systems. And last bullet on this slide is that some people will actually plug a cord directly into their hearing aid. That's known as a direct audio input hearing aid. And then that cord in turn could go into an assistive listening system receiver. Next slide, please. Slide number 12. This is called listening capabilities. There's basically three ways to hear, so to speak. One is acoustical. This is the way I would hear as a person who's not hard of hearing. The sound just passes through the air and my ear picks it up. So somebody who's hard of hearing without a hearing aid would hear that way. And even people with hearing aids would pick up the sound with their hearing aid microphone. So that's acoustical. The second is inductive. People who listen inductively are using a special component of a hearing aid known as a telecoil. And cochlear implants are also now equipped with telecoils. Basically, inductive listening means listening through magnetism. The sound passes through a magnetic field to the part of the hearing aid or cochlear implant, which picks up that magnetic signal. And then the third bullet is direct. As I mentioned before, there could be a direct connection into the hearing aid or a cochlear implant by a cord that's plugged into an assistive listening receiver. Next slide, number 13, please. Now I'm going to hand it over to Paul Beatty to talk about ADA and ABA standards.
Good afternoon. Since the beginning of the ADA, the standards have contained requirements for assistive listening systems. Our focus will be on the 2010 ADA standard and the current architectural barrier standard of roughly 2006. The ADA standard and Architectural Barriers Act standards are based upon the 2004 Access Board ADA and Architectural Barriers Act accessibility guidelines. We established minimum requirements, which included when you must provide permanently installed assistive listening systems. Department of Justice under ADA adopted our guidelines as requirements and incorporated them into their standard. If they wanted to, they could have added additional requirements to their standards, which they did in some areas, but in the area of assistive listening systems, they added no additional requirements to their standards. They essentially are using what the Access Board promulgated in 2004 in their ADA and ABA accessible guidelines. Slide 14, please. The 2010 ADA standard from the Department of Justice became mandatory March 15 of 2012, and it contains requirements for when a newly constructed building or facility or altered existing building facility must provide a assistive listening system. For the Architectural Barriers Act, the requirements are similar, except under the Architectural Barriers Act, there are minimum leasing requirements that apply to the federal government that says, federal government, when you lease a building, certain spaces must be equipped with an assistive listening system based upon the requirements of the standard. As many people know on this webinar, the Americans with Disabilities Act applies to state and local governments and certain private entities. Federal entities are not subject to the Americans with Disabilities Act. One reason for that is they've been subject since 1968 to the Architectural Barriers Act. Now, it wasn't roughly till the early 80s that the Architectural Barriers Act standards had assistive listening system requirements. Next slide, slide 15. Since many people are familiar with the Americans with Disabilities Act, we think it's important to point out the Architectural Barriers Act. I suspect that many of the listeners on this webinar have heard this over and over again, but for those new to our webinar, we want to make this point clear. Where the federal government designs, constructs, or alters something, they do it, or it's constructed and altered on their behalf. The Architectural Barriers Act is triggered. A simple way of looking at it, when federal dollars are specifically provided for construction purposes, the odds are pretty good the Architectural Barriers Act is triggered and the standards under that law are triggered. Unlike the Americans with Disabilities Act, the federal government is subject to minimum leasing requirements. And I gave the section number on the slide under the Architectural Barriers Act standard where one would go to see the minimum leasing requirements, which do contain minimum requirements to provide assistive listening systems in certain spaces. The Architectural Barriers Act can apply to non-federal entities where federal money is provided specifically for construction and alteration purposes. Slide 15. 16. Slide 16. Although we're talking about the standards and they apply to new construction and alterations, it's important to point out there are other requirements outside the standard in the ADA that requires state and local governments to worry about communications access for persons with disability and private entities who are public accommodations to worry about providing auxiliary aids and services and effective communications to allow persons with disability with communication disabilities to take advantage of their goods and services. Typically, when you think of that, it might be a sign language interpreter, it might be note-taking, but could also extend to providing assistive listening systems in areas where the standards do not require it. Also, the ADA requires reasonable accommodations for employment. So if one had a disabled employee who required a communications accommodation, that could extend to maybe needing to provide an assistive listening system. It's important to point out that questions regarding employment, state and local governments being their communication requirements under the ADA, and public accommodations meeting effective communication requirements under the ADA, those questions should be posed to the Department of Justice, not the U.S. Access Board. Our focus will be on the construction requirements contained in the current ADA standard as well as the current Architectural Barriers Act standards. We had a caller, somebody giving us an advanced question, and they were asking us, as a result of some lawsuits in sports stadiums, will a higher level of captioning than previously anticipated be required? And will this carry over into other venues such as theaters? Will visual display or other technology means of communicating besides signing be required? Again, it's important to point out that this webinar is focusing on the construction requirements in the standards for assistive listening system. Whether captioning or improved captioning is needed as part of effective communication under the ADA would be a question you need to pose to the Department of Justice. Now, the federal government, of course, not being subject to the ADA, has similar communication requirements that come from Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act. Again, the focus of this webinar is not on those requirements, but the specific requirements in the ADA standard. Slide 17, please. Where do the standards require assistive listening system? The slide shows two section numbers. The simple way of knowing what is Architecture Barriers Act and what is ADA. The section numbers to begin with the letter F. F-219 refers to the Architecture Barriers Act standard. Both those standards, ADA and Architecture Barriers Act, can be accessed via the Access Board website. And there's a slide at the end of the webinar that can provide our website address. So again, when are assistive listening systems required by the standard? Slide 18. Both standards require courtrooms to have an assistive listening system. Slide 19. The next is assembly areas, and there are two tests you need to run. First, is the space an assembly area? And the slide provides the definition out of the standard, a boiled down version. An assembly area, a building or facility or portion thereof used for purposes of entertainment, education, or civic gatherings or similar purposes. So a McDonald's restaurant, whether or not under building codes it's an assembly area, it doesn't meet the definition of assembly area in the standards. Therefore, it would not be subject to an assistive listening system requirement. A movie theater would meet the definition of an assembly area. So then we go on to the next requirement. Where audible communication is integral to the use of the space and the space has an audio amplification, the standard requires an assistive listening system in the space. So again, going back to the McDonald's restaurant, it's probably not an assembly area, but even if it was, audible communication is not integral to the use of the space. So therefore, even there might be a little sound system and there might be somebody that speaks into it and tells you that, your serving number 5 is available to pick up or something like that, it would not trigger the requirement of an assistive listening system. However, if that restaurant was a dinner theater, then clearly audible communications is integral to the use of the space. You can look at the word integral to be also essential. So did I come to the space to gain something from communication? A movie theater in general would be a good example. A classroom would be another good example of an assembly area where audible communication is integral to use of the space. But a classroom would not need an assistive listening system if it did not have an amplification system for audio. Now it's important to note here that don't think of just a public address system. You could be in a classroom and there's a TV mounted on the wall. Well, clearly the TV has a volume to it, has an amplification to it, and the classroom has audible communication, was integral to its use. So therefore, the TV would be required to have an assistive listening system because the classroom is an assembly area. Audible communication in that room is integral to use of the space, and there is an audio amplification system, that is the TV. Now, slide 20. Once it's determined that a space in a new construction situation would be required to have an assistive listening system, the next question is how many receivers are needed. The new standard, that is the 2010 ADA standard, as well as the current AD Architecture Barriers Act standards, no longer base the requirement on the number of fixed seats, but looks at seating capacity. So in the picture, on the right-hand side, you have a large assembly space, maybe a lecture hall, with fixed seats in it. On the left-hand side, you have a classroom with portable chairs and portable desks. Both would be subject to the standard. Both would look at the capacity of this space to determine the number of receivers needed. For the fixed seats, it'd be pretty easy to determine. For a classroom where there might be a variable number of seats, one might have to look at the capacity, occupancy capacity of that room to determine the number of receivers. Slide 21. Once one has determined the seating capacity in the space, one would then go to the table in the standard to determine the number of receivers needed. So if I had a space with a capacity of 50 or less, I'm required to have two receivers, and those two receivers have to be hearing aid compatible, which David will talk a little bit more about when we get to the types of assistive listening systems and hearing aid compatibility. The stand, the table requires you to round up. So if you run into a fraction, you're expected to round up. Slide 22. There are some exceptions to the number of receivers. Where a building contains more than one assembly area, like a multiplex movie theater complex, and assembly areas are required to provide assistive listening systems, and they have them under one management, and the total number of required receivers, you can calculate the total number of seats in the entire building, provided all receivers are usable with all systems. So for example there on the slide, if I have 10 theaters each with 300 seats, I would need a total of 65 receivers using this exception. If this exception was not available, I would have to go room by room, which means each room would need 12 receivers. Since there are 10 movie theaters, I would need a total of 120 receivers. So this is an exception that reduces some degree of impact but still requires receivers to be provided, on the condition that all receivers are usable with all systems. Another exception was where all seats in the assembly area are served by an induction loop assistive listening system, the minimum number of receivers required by the table to be hearing aid compatible shall not be required. You would still need, for example, if we go back to our example of 10 theaters, you would still need 65 receivers, but you would not be required to have a certain number of them that are hearing aid compatible, because the loop system would meet that need. And David will be explaining more about how hearing aids match up with the loop system and how that would function. Slide 23. With assistive listening systems comes a signage requirement informing patrons of the availability of the system. Typically, this would be at the entrance to each of the spaces, and you would have the international symbol of hearing loss, which is sort of an ear-shaped symbol with a line going through it. There is an exception, thinking of where you have ticket offices and windows that people would go to first. If the sign is provided there, then you would not need the symbol at each of the assembly spaces. Now, the standard does not require you indicate the type of system available, but we would recommend you would indicate that, particularly where an inductive loop system is provided. Slide 24. Although David's going to go into the benefits and uses of the types of systems, I'm going to briefly explain the three types. There's actually a fourth type that's seldom used. There's the direct wired type. This was probably more prevalent a long time ago when technology had an advance to where we are today, where individual seats might have a little receptacle where you'd plug in a headset. In that case, the earlier 1991 ADA standard, as well as the Uniform Federal Accessibility Standard, which some of you are familiar with, required the seats with the assistive listening system receptacle to be located within 50 feet viewing distance of the stage or playing area. Again, that requirement under the 91 standard and the UFES standard only applied if the assistive listening system served individual fixed seats, as compared to where maybe an FM system would serve all seating in a space. That 50-foot requirement is no longer in the 2010 standard nor the current Architecture Bears Act standard. the three main types that are provided, you see the slide there, there's the FM, which is essentially an FM transmitter that sends a signal to receiver and then from the receiver that an individual is carrying. We go up to a headset or then one of the various other devices that David mentioned earlier. The problem with receivers is, of course, finding them. You know, where are they? Where have they? When have they been cleaned last? Who's changed the batteries? So there's a management responsibility with the FM receiver assistive listening system. The other type of system is the infrared, which sends an infrared signal, line of sight, to a receiver, which then it goes up to the headset or earbud for somebody to use. The third type, what David can go into a lot of detail on, is the inductive loop. And this is where the signal is sent to a loop, and if somebody stands within the loop and they have a receiver, the receiver will pick up the electromagnetic signals from the loop. Now, some people, as David pointed out, are equipped with hearing aids that have a T-coil on it where they can pick up the signal. The benefit here, just quick and dirty here, somebody with a T-coil with their hearing aid doesn't need to worry about finding the receiver and determining whether the battery's good, etc. And if they know that the space is equipped with an inductive loop, they could then turn on their hearing aid, so to speak, to function using the space. Now, even though we've been talking about how the standard requires and where it requires assistive listening systems, again, there's nothing to prohibit you from going on the minimum requirements of the standard, either because you choose to do so or because of the effective communication requirements in the regulations. Somebody recently pointed out an example to us in John Hopkins' facility, and they installed an inductive loop in their lobby, among other areas, at a part of the facility that focused on clientele with hearing loss. The benefit here, obviously, is for customers to be able to communicate with receptionists much easier. The 2010 ADA standard, as well as the Architecture Bears Act standard, has a requirement in it in section 904.6 dealing with security glazing at service counters. Although assistive listening system is not required by the provision, it does say where security glazing, like a window, separates personnel from the public, a method to facilitate voice communication shall be provided. And that could be an assistive listening system as well as some other methodology. Now, we've been talking up to this point about new construction. You know, when you build a building, what spaces must have an assistive listening system? So if I built that 10 movie theater complex, all 10 of those spaces would have an assistive listening system. If I built a new classroom and there was an audio amplification system in each of the classrooms, then I'd be required to have an assistive listening system in that classroom. Alterations is obviously how does this apply to my existing buildings? Now remember, to some degree, the ADA has had construction requirements for assistive listening systems since 1991. So there may have been a requirement that certain existing spaces built after 1991 have assistive listening systems in there. The Uniform Federal Accessibility Standard, which was triggered under the Architectural Barriers Act since the mid-80s, has had assistive listening system requirements for certain spaces. So again, some spaces may already had to have them. But some spaces were constructed before the Architecture Barriers Act, or not subject to the Architecture Barriers Act, or before the ADA. And the question is, okay, when do I need to provide them under the standard? The standard focuses on essentially when you do alterations, you trigger accessibility improvements. A wise colleague of mine said, you know, essentially a simple way of looking at it is what you touch, you fix. What you touch, did you have a reasonable opportunity to fix it? So if somebody smashed up a receiver, that probably doesn't give you a reasonable opportunity to fix the entire system. Or if one just had a speaker in a movie theater and no assistive listening system and somebody vandalizes a speaker, it's probably not a reasonable opportunity to put in an assistive listening system. But a good example is if you replace the audio amplification system, the odds are somebody would say you would probably have to put in an assistive listening system in those spaces required under new construction to have the permanently installed assistive listening system. Now, outside where the standard requires an assistive listening system, one can provide assistive listening systems, and it may be portable in nature. The standard is focusing on building parts and basically assumes that feature will always be there when needed. Now, I'm going to be turning it back to David, and David's going to be talking about the benefits, the pros and cons of the different types of systems, and answer some of the questions that were sent in advance to this session.
Thank you, Paul. Good job. I'm going to delve into the different types of assistive listening systems soon, but I thought it would be useful to take a step back and talk a little bit about the technology. I remember when I would work at the Hearing Loss Association of America, they had a video just on the telecoil, which is a component of the hearing aid that allows somebody to hear inductively, as I mentioned before, to be able to hear the speech of what somebody's saying while at the same time knocking out background noise. You know, it's interesting that assistive listening devices and systems can be used in many different settings, not just sitting in an auditorium and listening to a speaker, or sitting in a classroom and listening to a teacher, but sometimes there's portable systems that people who are hard of hearing will bring to dinner conversations or to parties so that they can hold the microphone in front of the person who's talking and hear them better. Sometimes cars are looped so that people can hear, can keep their eyes on the road and still hear what their passengers are saying if the driver's hard of hearing. So anyway, let me continue to talk about the telecoil. Only about 1/3 of hearing aids have a telecoil, but that number is growing. Now, part of the reason is because some hearing aids are smaller. They might be an in-the-ear hearing aid, and maybe that person didn't ask for it, or the audiologist didn't consider a telecoil for that size of hearing aid. You wouldn't find a telecoil in one of those much smaller in-the-canal hearing aids. Those are about the size of a pencil eraser. But it's an issue when an audiologist will dispense one of the larger hearing aids, like the kind that hooks behind the ear, and not include a telecoil with it. Sometimes it can be added at a later time. But this is really important to include as an option for people that want to use assistive listening systems this way, with a neck loop or to hear through a wide area loop. And also to hear better on the telephone. It's essentially asking an audiologist, can I have a hearing aid that's good for telephone use? It's become a standard feature in the kind of cochlear implants they have now, which are ear level. They kind of hook behind the ear and look in some ways the same as a behind the ear hearing aid. And as I mentioned, in addition to assistive listening systems, they can be used by the telephone and with the telephone. I remember when I was working as an usher at the Kennedy Center and handing out assistive listening systems, I spoke to somebody who had used his telephone switch at home but had no idea that he could use this in conjunction with an assistive listening system, and it put a nice smile on his face. Okay, slide 26, please. This is entitled Advantages of Inductive Listening. it eliminates feedback. You know what that is? That's that terrible squealing sound you might hear sometimes from somebody's hearing aid, because sometimes it's caused by the hearing aid ear mold not being quite a perfect fit. But if you hold a telephone up to a hearing aid and it's still in the microphone position, you could get that kind of feedback, that whistling sound, you might call it, from a hearing aid. So it allows you to turn the hearing aid switch from microphone to T, which stands for telecoil or telephone, and then you're able to hear what somebody's saying while at the same time having shut off the microphone and preventing the acoustical feedback problem. It improves the speech-to-noise ratio. It's another way of explaining how it reduces noise. It compensates for poor distance and poor acoustics, as I mentioned before. It increases the effectiveness of hearing aids and cochlear implants, and it enables the user to turn up the volume without making it loud for others. So that's important. Somebody who's hard of hearing will have a little volume control in their receiver, and they can turn it up and down so it's just right for them without having to turn up the volume from the speakers in the ceiling or speakers on stands and making it too loud for everybody else. Okay, next slide, number 27, please. So, as Paul mentioned, there's three main types of assistive listening systems: FM, infrared, and inductive loop. Here's some general information about each one. All three of them are cordless. All three of them are considered to work well. So that answers the question, which one's best? They all can work well, but they all have the advantages and disadvantages, so it would be what works best in a certain context or environment. Each can work with or without hearing aids and cochlear implants, so that addresses another myth that an assistive listening system is only for somebody with hearing aids. Now, if you're hard of hearing, And you can still use an assistive listening system, let's say with headphones or the earbud I mentioned before, and increase the volume for yourself. If you're not hard of hearing and you haven't tried one of these yet, you might want to borrow one when you go to a movie theater and just see how it works. Each has the potential to experience interference, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. And as I mentioned before, each can be available as a personal system as well as a wide area system. So for example, if somebody's hiking outdoors, the leader of the hike could be talking into an FM transmitter, and somebody behind might use an FM receiver and still hear what somebody's saying in an outdoor environment. So they're good for one-on-one as well as broadcasting to a wide area in a room.
Hello. Paul, we're not able to hear you right now. Can you try it again? I think for some reason we seem to have lost your sound. Still no sound from you, Dave. Can you go through the audio setup wizard again and see if there's something that might be happening with your system on that? Again, folks, we apologize that we've lost some sound from our presenters, so we're trying to get that fixed. Please stay with us.
Okay, testing. Can you hear me now?
Yes, you're back on.
Thank you. As I moved around, I knocked something on my headphone that caused it to cut out. I apologize. I've been talking about infrared systems and how they pick up the speech that's transmitted through light waves. They're commonly used in courtrooms or places where you need to ensure privacy. If it was somebody's therapy session, for example, that would be the appropriate choice, again, to ensure confidentiality. But they can be used in other venues as well, movies, live performance theaters, conventions, and even with TVs. So again, an assistive listening system can be used to hear better in a wide area like an audience, a TV, a telephone, and so on. The disadvantage to infrared systems is sometimes they have interference from bright sunlight. So although it's possible to use them outside, they're probably not the best choice for outside use. They can effectively reflect off some surfaces. Some people say they only work in line of sight, that the receiver has to be pointed directly at the emitter, as it's called, that's transmitting the signal. But sometimes the light waves also bounce off the wall, just like when you light up a room with a lamp, you get some exposure from reflection. But as I mentioned, you've got to keep the receiver pointed in the right direction so that the diode is exposed and can pick up the signal. Let's move on to slide 29, please. Okay, now we're talking about FM systems. These transmit radio waves to receivers, and they're quite popular. They're commonly used in classrooms where movement of the speaker is required. As I mentioned, they could even be used in an outdoor environment where somebody's speaking. They're not affected by light, but they are susceptible to other types of interference, like radio interference. They can cover a range of 200 plus feet. They're portable. So you could buy a small kit for yourself that might cost $500 or $600 with just the one receiver and one transmitter, or you can get a more professional system, which I'll talk about in a moment. And FM systems can be used in multiple frequencies. So for example, if you're at a movie theater that's a multiplex, and so different movies are playing in different rooms, the receivers could be set at different frequencies so that you're not listening to the soundtrack of the movie next door as opposed to the one in the room that you came to see. So they can be put on channel 1, 2, 3, and so on. Let's move on to slide 30, please. This is entitled Audio Loop Systems. And I'm going to answer a couple questions that we received as I spend time on this subject. Audio loops transmit through electromagnetic fields. So you're actually hearing through magnetism. As Paul mentioned, it has the advantage of no receiver necessary. So if somebody who's hard of hearing walks into a room, they can simply sit down and flick the switch on their hearing aid from M, which is the microphone position, to T, the telecoil position, and hear inductively, as opposed to hearing the sound come through the microphone. That's why it's important for the person who's speaking to actually talk into a microphone. Have you ever gone to listen to somebody speak who asked the audience, does anybody need me to use the mic? And nobody responds, and then they just sit down the mic and say, it's okay, I can just broadcast my voice. But it's important to use the microphone because science has shown that even if you don't have a hearing aid, the entire curve of the class will go up when amplification is used in audiences. If you don't have a hearing aid, though, the way you would here with a wide area audio loop system is that you would borrow a receiver that you could plug a headset into, and the receiver, which I might call a loop listener, would pick up the magnetic field. Audio loop systems are often permanently installed. They don't have to be, but it's nice when they're permanently installed so you don't have any cord on the floor to trip over. The reception can vary, but that can be worked out through careful installation so that all areas of the room have good reception and not just an area that's close to the wire of the loop. Now, one person asked whether a loop could be used at exhibits in museums. And the simple answer is yes. You could loop an exhibit so that somebody who's got their hearing aid in the T position and walks up to the exhibit would hear whatever that exhibit is, whatever it's saying. So I don't know whether it would automatically be talking or whether they would press a button for it to start talking. But basically, whatever is coming out of a speaker could also be picked up with a loop. Now, one of the challenges is, what if there's multiple exhibits? What if we're not just talking about one exhibit? Well, then the installation has to be done very carefully so that the magnetism from one exhibit doesn't spill over to another. So that is possible, but the idea is to be able to focus on hearing what you want to hear and not picking up interference from a nearby exhibit. Another question we got, and I'll read it to you. We have a conference room that divides into three rooms. We have an FM assistive listening system because we were told that there couldn't be a loop within a loop. Is that true? And the simple answer is no. It's possible to install a wide area inductive loop system in a way that's kind of zigzag. They call it a phased array. So it's not actually circular like a loop. So I guess I'd have to think through how that conference room is divided. It's three rooms, so it's possible to have an assistive listening system in each room, a loop in each room. We actually do that in our own conference room. We installed it in such a way that the magnetism can't spill out into the hallway into a disability organization in the next office. So it prevents interference. The minute you step outside the door, you can no longer hear using the telecoil switch. So let's move on to the next question. We have a large two-story atrium where large gatherings are held, sometimes party-like events, and sometimes a presentation. Would a loop be effective in this space? And the answer is yes, it could be, but again, the installation needs to be good. If it's a party-like event, what is the hard of hearing person going to hear? Maybe somebody making an announcement to kick off the event. It could pick up that sound going through a wide area system. If they're just walking around the room, though, wanting to hear what individual people are saying, then they would carry a portable system with them and maybe hand the transmitter over to the person who's speaking to hold. Sometimes it's used for a presentation, so very easily it could be a loop system could be used for a presentation. If there's two levels that people need to hear at, then the installation has to carefully feed the loop from both levels, both stories, into the drivers so that the sound will be transmitted evenly to both levels. And I got a third question. I'll just address it now while I see it. What technology is there to communicate to somebody who's almost totally deaf and legally blind? And we thought about this for a while, and we realized that if this person is able to effectively use a computer, then a CART reporter, that is, the person who's typing what people are saying, computer-assisted real-time transcription, could type what's being said in the room to a website, and then the person who's deaf-blind, picking up the text on the website through their computer, could then understand what's being said through whatever assistive technology they use with their computer, whether it's a refreshable braille display or large magnification. Let's move on to slide 31, please. This is a picture of an inductive loop system. There's no text, no bullets to read, but it shows how the loop system can be used for just a couple rows of a large room, or it can be used throughout the perimeter of the entire auditorium. I don't know, maybe they only looped a small area to try to save money, but then it would have to be clear to the people who are hard of hearing that that's where they need to sit if they want to hear inductively. Next slide, please. Let's talk about the microphone. We've talked a lot about imagining listening to people who are speaking, like you're in an audience and you might be listening to a theater or like a live performance theater or the output for a movie theater. But what if you're at a conference table and you're at a staff meeting and you want to hear what people are saying at different sides of the table? Well, this is a picture of an omnidirectional microphone that's picking up sound from different directions and then feeding it into the transmitter so that somebody who's hard of hearing can hear what different people around the table are saying. Now, sometimes people use a directional microphone with the transmitter, which means you have to inconveniently pass the microphone around the table or to whoever wants to speak next. Getting back to a speaker talking to an audience, there's qualities, different types of quality when it comes to microphones, and that could be the most important or most expensive part of the system. There's, you know, $1,000 microphones out there. But if you're trying to have a discussion with a large group, it's important to have a number of microphones, maybe at a ratio of one to every two or three people. So that somebody at the end of the table isn't trying to speak too loud and have to aim what they're saying at a microphone in the middle of the table, or so you don't have to move the microphone around to different ends of the table. Slide 33, please. So Paul mentioned a little bit about the maintenance required for assistive listening systems. This is entitled ALS troubleshooting. Sometimes the battery can begin to weaken or go dead and a new battery is needed. So a facility would want to keep spare batteries on hand and maybe ensure that if it's a rechargeable battery that it's been charged up overnight. Sometimes a theater just forgets to turn the system on, and once they do, everything's working fine again. Sometimes somebody's handed a receiver but has never used an assistive listening system before and doesn't realize that the wheel needs to be moved to click on and that they can move it up and down to increase the volume for themselves, to adjust the volume. Occasionally a receiver can be broken, but more often it's a problem like the person never listened inductively before and they were given a neck loop and didn't realize that they had to flick the switch on their hearing aid to the T position. So I've had to help people learn how to use an assistive listening system sometimes for their first time at the beginning of the meeting. As I mentioned, all three types of assistive listening systems are susceptible to potential interference, and in some cases, there's nothing you can do about it. For example, if it's an inductive loop system, there could be other sources of magnetism interfering with the output in the room. There could possibly be a break in the cord, so sometimes somebody just needs to be handed a new headphone or a new earbud, and then it'll work just fine. So the point is that you have to be a detective sometimes to figure out what the problem is when it's not working right. Next slide, please. Slide 34. It's not moving, right?
Calling. We will now connect you to your call. Line muted.
I got a weird sound. Testing, testing. Can you still hear me? Okay. This slide's entitled ALS Considerations. One is that prices can vary, so it's important to comparison shop. As we just talked about, there are maintenance issues when you use the
line
kind of system
unmuted.
that uses batteries. There can be staff training issues. Sometimes an owner will buy an assistive listening system for their facility, but the actual staff who are handing them out need to be trained to ask people, do you have a T-switch in your hearing aid? Would you prefer to have a neck loop as opposed to a headset? And then they might even have a way for them to test it out right there at the place where they're handing it out before they walk into the theater with it. People who are setting up the system should check it before the crowd starts coming into the room. You want to make sure everything's working okay before people start borrowing the receivers. Now, facilities cannot charge to loan assistive listening device receivers. There can be no additional charge for providing those. However, they may ask the person who's hard of hearing to supply an ID card or a credit card or something just to hold temporarily until they return the receiver. And as Paul mentioned, there's Americans with Disabilities Act rules on the number of receivers and attachments. Slide 35, please. Now, who needs to know about assistive listening systems? As I just mentioned earlier, a facility owner could buy it, but not necessarily ensure that the staff is trained. Sound contractors sometimes need training. I actually wrote a proposal and won a grant to actually train sound contractors on helping people who are hard of hearing and installing assistive listening systems. They needed to know things like when they sell a system to ensure that they sell a variety of listening couplers to throw in some neck loops and not just sell earbuds. Consumers and families need to know about assistive listening systems. Sometimes they can really facilitate a conversation, let's say at the family around the dinner table, or even one-on-one. And it's important for audiologists and hearing aid dispensers to talk about really hearing assistive technology in general to their clients or patients. as well as specifically assistive listening systems, so that they get more than their hearing aid, but they get prepared to go out there in society and be able to couple their hearing aid with these assistive listening devices that kind of stretch the hearing aid, so to speak. It will help them in small as well as wide group situations. Slide 36, please. So here we have some helpful resources. The Access Board published three bulletins on assistive listening systems, about 10 or 11 years ago now. And the reason there's three of them is because one's targeted to a facility owner, another is for an installer, and another is for the consumer or user. So there's different levels of technology, of the technical nature in these bulletins. There's also a publication called Demystifying Hearing Assistance Technology. And although this is a book, it's been published online and it can be viewed free of charge at the website that's listed. It's written by Cheryl Davis, who I actually helped train, and then she just ran with it. And she's now a professor that teaches courses in this stuff. And I thought it would be useful for you to consider the fact that there are lists of demonstration centers where somebody might walk in to try an assistive listening device for the first time. And of course, it's important for people who are hard of hearing to learn how to advocate for themselves, to actually ask for what they need and to specify which kind of coupler they need, and to make sure that if it's not working right, that they can help with the troubleshooting, like the batteries going dead, that kind of thing. So I included a link to the largest nonprofit organization that's set up to serve people who are hard of hearing. I guess that about covers it. Next slide, please, slide 37. Now we're ready to address people's questions that have been typed into us. And I'll hand it over to Peggy.
Thanks, David and Paul. Great information. And before we get into answering some of the questions that came in the chat room and give David at least a chance to take a breath here, I wanted to respond to some of the questions that have been coming in about captioning. You know, it's not that we're ignoring these questions, it's just that this is an issue that's really outside of the authority of the Access Board. And so I wanted to just give you an update on what is the status of any requirements related to movie captioning and video description. The Department of Justice did publish an advance notice of proposed rulemaking on this subject back in July 26, 2010. And in that advance notice, they were considering to propose revising the regulation to require movie theaters, owners, and operators to show movies with closed captioning and video description in their theaters at least 50% of the time. So the purpose of the notice was to discuss how best to frame such a requirement and to determine the costs and benefits of any such requirement. So there has been no further action on this advance notice that was published in 2010. So at this point, I think really what you need to do if you want more guidance in this area is to contact the Department of Justice. And I'm going to give you their number. It's 800-514-0301. Again, that number is 800-514-0301. Their TTY number is 800-514-0383. Again, that's 800-514-0383 is the TTY number. So I just wanted to address that before we moved into some of the other questions. And At this point, I'm going to turn it first over to Paul to address some of the questions that came in related to facilities.
Thank you, Peggy. We'll be going back to slide 19 because a lot of these questions center on when does the standard require an assistive listening system. Okay, remember, excluding the courtrooms, which must have an assistive listening system, other spaces you have to go through essentially a three-part test. Is it an assembly area, using the definition there? And then, if it is automobile communication integral to the use of the space, and is there an audio amplification system in there? So the question was, what about a party room in a McDonald's restaurant? So a party room, not knowing much about McDonald's restaurant party rooms, but I'm going to assume that's an assembly area. It's used for purposes of entertainment. I assume a party room would be purposes of entertainment. So I would call it an assembly area. Second, is audible communication integral to the use of the space? And this is where it gets tricky. I would say yes in a party room. You're there to talk and communicate, although ultimately that could be a Department of Justice call or a lawyer call in terms of splitting hairs. It's not like a movie theater where I'm coming there for sound. You know, I might come into the party room specifically for a presentation, and that makes it clearer that audible communication is integral to the use of the space. But if I'm just coming in there to talk to my friends, and that's the purpose of the party room, it may not be considered integral to the use of the space. And then lastly, does it have an audio amplification system? And if the answer is yes to all three, then the party room will need an assistive listening system if built brand new, or if altered and a new audio amplification system is added, then an assistive listening system would also need to be included. We had a question about a playhouse that has musicals and guests and there's plays. Do they have to display any type of assistive listening system? And I understand the building was built about 10 years ago under the 1991 ADA standard. Again, probably using slide 19, it would probably be an assembly area because clearly it's entertainment. I would assume with a playhouse, they probably have an auto amplification system. And with a playhouse, I'm assuming that communication is integral to the use of the space. You're coming there to hear somebody sing, guest lecturer, watch a play, whether it be audible communication. So under the 91 standard, as well as the 2010 standard, one would need an assistive listening system. Now, I should point out the difference with the 91 standard, they required fixed seats. Unlike the 2010 standard, it's not based upon fixed seats. So if a playhouse was built 10 years ago and it did not have fixed seats, then under the standard, an assistive listening system would not be required. Now, as we had pointed out in one of the slides, that outside of the standard, there are requirements for effective communication, both in the regulations that apply in slide 16, effective communications, both in the regulations that apply to state and local governments and the regulations that apply to private entities that are public accommodations. And we gave the section numbers on the slide where you'd find those requirements. So it's possible, or say the odds are pretty good, that a playhouse that one can argue that an assistive listening system would be needed for effective communication, even if there weren't any fixed seats back when the 1991 standard was the applicable standard. A question dealing with an assistive listening system at a building entrance needed where you have some sort of audible receiver, I guess where there's some sort of two-way communication. So if we can go back again to slide 19, remember you have the three-part test. Is that entrance an assembly area or portions of an assembly area? Probably not. Is audible communication integral to the use of that space? That can be questioned. Does it have an audio amplification system? Well, yes. Now you say, okay, well, great, Paul. You know, you said a bunch of probably nots or maybes. Well, in this particular issue, the standard does address it, but it's addressed slightly differently. There's a requirement in the standard where to gain entrance to a building or facility or restricted areas within the building or facility, and you use a two-way communication system, then that two-way communication system will be both audible and visual. So even though it doesn't require an assistive listening system, it does require some way to communicate visually. Now, depending on the level of communication necessary to gain entry, it could be very elaborate visual communication. If it was very minor, like you come up and press a button, which sends a signal to a gate guard, the gate guard looks in a TV camera and sees it's Paul and presses a button back, which then lights a light at the entry saying, okay, when this light is on, the door's unlocked, you can come on in. And obviously that could be also communicated audibly. Then nothing more would be needed under the Section 230 requirement in the 2010 standard. But if it required, okay, Paul, what's your pass number, and a lot more elaborate communication, it could be that a TTY is needed, but no assistive listening system is required by the 230 requirement in the ADA standard. Would an outdoor high school amphitheater with a portable, not permanent, audio amplification system brought in for certain events require an assistive listening system? I would say, let me think about it. Well, I would argue the effective communication would say yes. It's an assembly area, and clearly the amphitheater is audible communication is integral to the use of the space in general. They brought in a portable system, so I would say probably the standard doesn't address portable, doesn't address building parts, so it gets a little complicated here. In a way, it's a piece of furniture and technically is not subject to the standard, but often you can use the standard as guidance to help determine effective communication. You know, what is the reasonable way to provide effective communication? So if that audio amplification system was permanent, then, you know, you would need the assistive listening system. So that's a good way of gauging whether effective communication would be require a portable assistive listening system for this event. Now, the odds are that school amphitheater also had a permanently installed amplification system, so as part of that, if it was built brand new under the 2010 standard, they should also have the permanent assistive listening system with it. Can we turn over to David Backlis?
Okay, Paul, I was thinking about that last question you addressed, and you know, regardless of what's required, if there's a PA system, it would make sense to associate an assistive listening system with it. And it can be done very easily. They could connect an FM transmitter into the audio out jack of the PA system and then hand receivers to those outside who need them and then just take it apart and bring it back in when they're all finished. Okay, well, I've received a number of questions. One is whether a loop system is a loop around the room, whether it's a wire around the room. And the answer is yes. Sometimes the wire is installed in the ceiling, and sometimes it's actually around the perimeter of the room, maybe underneath the carpet. There's advantages and disadvantages to the installation in that case. If the ceiling is high, then I wouldn't install it in the ceiling because the signal could be too far away from the people who are sitting down. If you install it in the carpet, though, if somebody comes at a later time to, you know, put in some new carpet, they have to be careful not to cut the loop. That happened before at the Smithsonian Institution. They cut the loop by accident, not knowingly. One person asked what a if I could tell more, describe more about a silhouette inductor. They never heard of that kind of listening connector before. And it's not as popular as the others, but it can be used by people with severe hearing loss who use the behind-the-ear kind of hearing aid. It looks curved. It's a curved piece of plastic about the same shape as the hearing aid, and it would hook over the ear just as the hearing aid hooks over the ear. But because it's flush against the hearing aid, there's a really good pickup of the magnetism that's generated by the silhouette inductor, and then it just has a cord at the other end that plugs into the sound source, whether it's a receiver or a radio or whatever they want to hear. If you did an internet search on HATIS, that's HATIS, I think it stands for Hearing Assistance Telephone Interconnect System, you can learn more about these silhouette inductors as they're used with telephones. Sometimes that's the only way some people can understand what's said on a telephone. Another question was about proximity. Whether the person has to be close to the loop system in order to have a good pickup. And that's happened in the past, but if there's a, that is, somebody would need to be right near the perimeter of the room where the loop was installed. But if there's a careful installation by somebody who's experienced, then there should be good pickup at all areas of the room. That's the goal of a good installation. The same is true for infrared, that there have been times when people had to sit in certain areas of movie theaters or other auditoriums to get a good pickup with their infrared receiver. And it shouldn't be necessary. If enough emitters are installed in the right places, then the sound contractor who's doing the installation should actually sit in every seat and test it out to make sure there's a good pickup. Are there agencies that can come over to somebody's facility and provide some recommendations? Well, there might be in some areas. The Hearing Loss Association of America has chapters throughout the country, and there could be volunteers with those chapters who'd be willing to come out and talk about assistive listening systems. That's one thought. Another thought is you could certainly get a bid from a sound contractor. There's a National Systems Contractor Association with a list of sound contractors on their website, and you could call some of them and ask, and, you know, ask these questions to them. Do they sell different types, FM versus infrared? There's not that many installers of loop systems. But there is a website with a list of the loop systems. I think it's called Looping America, but you could email me and I could check that for sure and give you such a list if you needed it. But again, the sound contractor should be able to talk to you about neck loops and other kinds of listening connectors and ensure that you get one that's sufficient for your needs. A professional system is recommended for group situations where you might have a conference table and a staff meeting. But that can get expensive because you have the driver and a microphone mixer, multiple microphones, as well as the actual loop or other assistive listening system technology. And the last question that I recall reading has to do with a conference meeting room that has a TV. And that's a good question, that sometimes somebody will be speaking to an audience and they'll say, and now let's cut over to a video on the TV for us to listen to for a few minutes. And all of a sudden, the person who's hard of hearing can't understand anymore because they didn't connect the TV to the assistive listening system, which can be done so that the person who's hard of hearing can hear the speaker as well as the television. I'm going to turn it back over to Peggy or Paul for Peggy with regard to any further questions.
Actually, I'm afraid we're about out of time right now, so I want to thank David and Paul for their presentation, and I'll turn it back over to Robin or Claudia.
Great. Thank you, Peggy, and thank you, everyone, for your participation in today's session. We do invite you to our next session, which is next month on November 1st, Accessible Historic Buildings and Facilities, same place, same time. And you can go to the website, www.accessibilityonline.org, to register for that session. This session was recorded, and it will be archived on the website, www.accessibilityonline.org, and that archive should be posted in the next 48 hours, along with the handouts for downloading and printing if you were not able to get them before today's session. So thank you, and you will receive an evaluation by email. We do appreciate your feedback, and we do ask that you complete that and give that back to us. It's an email link, so you'll be able to do it all online. Again, thank you very much for your participation. Thank you to Paul, David, and Peggy, and everyone have a great day. To disconnect from the platform, you can just close your browser, and or there's a little link on the lower left-hand corner. It looks like two plugs that come together. If you just click on that, that will also release you from the system. Thank you, everyone.